Shavua Tov. So we got to Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Beis on the bottom. Let's just review a few things that we studied. First of all, if you look at the Gemara, let me just see where you'll find it. Do you see the Tosis Ubishas HaSakana? You see such a Tosis?
Yep.
Thank you so much. Yeah, please, if you don't mind goats. Then.
No, I use it often.
Oh, good. I never figured out the difference to me. They, all milk tastes the same. But. So right across from Tosis Ubishas HaSakana, the Gemara says, Ubishas HaSakana Meinicha Al Shulchano V'dayo. Now, what exactly is this Shas HaSakana about? If you take a look at Tosfos, Dibra Maskil Bishasa Sakana Nirli Ri Dahainu Michi Osu Chevre Lebovel. So this word Chevre is a reference to a certain nation that's called by that name, and they were idol worshippers, and they came into Bovel. Kidomer b'perek kira, quoting the Gemara a little bit later on here in Masech to Shabbos, ma'u l'taltel shraga d'chanukasa mekame chevre b'shabsa. The Gemara there is addressing the issue of what's called tiltul mukta. A candle with a lit fire on it is mukta on Shabbos, and it's also a tiltul. You're not allowed to move it from place to place. But the Gemara wants to know, would you be allowed to move it because of the fear that you have from the gzera of the chaverim? Now, in order to understand what this is about, I'm going to read to you a little bit here from the Biurei HaTosfos. These are like footnotes on the Tosfos. And he says the following. He says, Bitkufa Mesuyemes Bizman HaMoroim, at some historical point during the period of the Amoroim, he gil lebovel, who came to Bovel? Bnei Uma Achas, a nation, Hanikroim Chaverim. So interesting, the name Chaverim. Because today, Chaverim, especially in America, means, I think here they call it Yedidim. You know, if you get stuck with your car, you know, they'll help you if you lock yourself out of your car. But anyway. Now, Ubiyom Edyom, which means they had a certain holiday for their religion. Velohi Nichu LeYisrael LeHadlik Neros. And they prohibited the Jewish people from lighting candles. And the Gemara in Perek Kira here in Masechta Shabbos wants to know, are you allowed to, can we permit you to move a ner on Shabbos so that the Chaverim, this nation, would not discover it? In any event, we see that it was the Chaverim that instituted this gzerah, that because it was Yom Edyom, it was their holiday, you're not allowed to, the Jewish people and other people are not allowed to light neros. Now what's confusing to me, are we talking about what we call pikuach nefesh? Why do I think that we're not talking about a life endangering situation? The Gemara vacillates back and forth. Are you allowed to move your candle because of the chaverim? Well, what would be what would be the din if it was a real pikuach nefesh? For sure. I mean, tiltil mukta is certainly not, it's not even doraisa, most probably, or there is a Rashi that does seem, so it's not doraisa, and even if it were doraisa, you certainly violated doraisa for the sake of pikuach nefesh, for chaimayim. You violate the Shabbos for a cholah. So I'm not sure what would be the repercussions if the Chaverim discovered that you had violated their decree and you went and you lit a candle and they discovered your candle. In any event, Tosis has a different question. The Imtomer, and if you'll ask, what do you gain by lighting your Hanukkah candle on a table? Right? We said that Bishas Sakone, where do you put your Hanukkah candle? On your dining room table. He says, "Ala shulchan." Even if you put your Hanukkah table candle on your table, nami, maybe the chaverim will discover your Hanukkah candle. I mean, well, why does, how does the fact that you light the candle on your table, how does it save you or protect you from the chaverim discovering you? And I'll prove to you, says Tosfos, that the chaverim not only investigated the Jewish homes and saw and tried to discover candles on the outside of the home, but they were even went inside the home in order to find out if the Jewish people had lit candles inside the home, which would be again in violation of their Yom Ejam, their holiday. How do I know this? Kidamrina begitin. The Gemara says in Gittin, Rabba Bar Chana Cholash, Rabba became ill, he fell to his bed, and his family members and his friends, various Amoraim, great scholars, came to visit him. And while they were there, Asa Chavra, Chavra is the Aramaic form of this the name of this nation, of Cheber or Chiber, Vishakal Shraga Mikamayim. And they mamish grabbed the nair that was lit in front of them. And where did they find this nair? If the Gemara is telling a story about visiting the sick, most probably where was this nair? Was it outside the house or inside the house? L'chora was inside the house. So we see that the chaverim came even inside the house and they discovered the candle. So what did you gain now by lighting your Hanukkah candle on the inside of your house? The Tosfos answers, V'yesh lomar, De'ein regilus kolkach lechapes bebatin, meaning that although on occasion it would happen, that would be the exception to the rule, that's what went on at the time that Rabba took ill, but as a general rule, they do not go into the house in order to look for neros. So that's called Ein Regilus Kol Kach. You know, whenever you talk about Regilus, whether it's the, you know, if you want to break it down into statistical probabilities, so you would say Ein Regilus would be something like 10%. But then he adds the words Kol Kach. So I don't know, Kol, it's not so Regil. It sounds like it's more like maybe 20% of a possibility that they came in. Now, once again, if there's a 20% of a possibility that the chaverim would penetrate, you know, beyond the threshold of your house to discover your candle, if we were talking about pikuach nefesh, if that's what the word sakana means in our Gemara, then I would think that surely a 20% possibility would be enough to have us do away with the mitzvah Ner Chanukah, meaning instead of lighting the Ner Chanukah, taking it from the outside into the inside and putting it on your table, we should have completely done away with the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Do you follow what I'm saying? B'shas ha-sakana, because the chaverim, although ein regil is kol kach, it's not so regil, you know, it wasn't a regular investigation. You know, I'm thinking of back in the time of the Soviet Union, the KGB. You know, the KGB would look for Jewish books because that was, you know, the religion was prohibited. So how far would they push themselves, the KGB? Would they go into your basement, you know, go see maybe you hid a Jewish book in your basement? So it's Ein Regilus Kol Kach. But still, if it's possible, then you want to protect yourself in Pikuach Nefesh even of such a possibility. So I'm tempted to think And again, this is all very iffy. Right? I can't tell you for sure that this concept of b'shas asakana is not pikuach nefesh. We shouldn't analyze it under the category of pikuach nefesh, which is a life endangering situation. Perhaps the punishment for lighting such a candle would be severe, but it would not entail a death sentence. Because again, if so, then A, why does Tosfos feel that this is the same situation as the Gemara later on in Perek HaKira that vacillates back and forth about whether or not you could violate the sotiltel on Shabbos if you have a ner for the sake of the chaverim, of avoiding them, l'chor, that should be pikuach nefesh. Why did the Gemara vacillate about that point? And secondly, if it's ein regilus kol kach, but on occasion they would enter into your home and check, you know, to see if you had any candles lit inside your house, then pashtus, if it's pikuach nefesh, even if it's only a 20% possibility, that would be enough to completely undermine the mitzvah of ner chanuk. So I was thinking maybe. Maybe what's going on here is the following. That we have a concept in halacha called shas hashmat. So one way of learning this Gemara of sakana would be to say the following, that for sure you and I know that for the mitzvah of Chanukah, with all due respect, it's not one of the big three, and you would not endanger your life for the sake of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, even if you're under this decree of the Goyim of Yom Edyom. Because if a guy forces you, let's say a guy puts a gun to your head and he says, "Eat the veil or I'll kill you." So what does the halacha tell you in such a case? You eat the nevela, right? It's not one of the big three. So if he puts a gun to your head and he says, "Don't light near Hanukkah or I'll kill you," then you don't light near Hanukkah because it's not one of the big three. But that's only in a general historical period. But if the historical period is called Shas HaShmad, where they're trying to undermine your religious observance, then you'd have to give up your life even for the sake of Shar Mitzvah HaTorah. Not only that, the Gemara in Sanhedrin goes as far as to say, do you remember this? Yes. Arkas of the Masadi?
Shoelace.
Correct, the color of your shoelace. So the Jewish people wore white shoelaces, let's say, they wore white shoelaces, it doesn't say exactly what color they wore, but the Goyim used to wear red shoelaces, and he puts his gun to your head, B'shas HaShmad, and he says, I want you to identify as a guy in your Malbush and wear red shoelaces. You have to give up your life for that. That's called Shas HaShmad. And if that be the case, then we could actually learn the Gemara literally, that this is Shas Sakana, that maybe this is a life or death situation. And then you'll ask me, so if it's a life or death situation, so what? It's Shar Mitzvah HaTorah. We're not talking about the Gimel Averos Chamuros. But the answer to that would be that maybe this is called the Shas Hashmad. Oh, so if it's a Shas Hashmad, then Adarabah, why not force him and require of him to light his candle outside the house? So here I wanted to raise the following question. I'm just thinking out loud with you. You know, we're learning a chavrusa here. Is it possible that Shas HaShmad only applies when there's a clear-cut chiyuv ha-mitzvah? But what the Chachamim could do is, in the case of a mitzvah d'rabbanon, and this will only apply in the case of a mitzvah d'rabbanon, is they could restrict the mitzvah, change the requirements of the mitzvah, and even go as far as to completely nullify the mitzvah at the point of Shas HaShmat, in order to avoid the loss of Jewish life. So when you have a chiyuv mitzvah and it's Shas HaShmad, then there's no question about it. You'd have to give up your life for that. rather than omit that mitzvah. But if it's a mitzvah derabbanan, the rabbanan have the license to completely undermine the mitzvah, so to speak, neutralize and say, well, this mitzvah doesn't apply. They can't do that with the mitzvah d'oraisa, but they have that. This is called, if you're familiar with the Gemara's language in many places, heimamru veheimamru. I mean, when it's the Rabbanan that created a mitzvah or an isa, whatever it is, they can whittle it down and tell you when it applies and when it doesn't apply. So in this case, what the Gemara thinks is that in order to avoid loss of Jewish life, we're going to change, the Rabbanan have the ability to change the nature of the mitzvah. And instead of requiring you to light the candle in a place outside where they'll find you, they'll discover you, and then we have loss of Jewish life, the mitzvah is going to be reestablished and reformulated as light inside your house. So Tosafot says, but what do you gain by lighting inside your house? You're still going to cause possibly loss of Jewish life because these chaverim will enter into your house, as we saw in the Gemara in Gittin when Rabbah took sick, they discovered the candle inside Rabbah's house. The chaverim discovered the candle. So you see that they even penetrate beyond the walls of your house and they go into your house. So Tosas says, Ein regilus kol kach. Oh. So what Tosas might be saying is the following. That the Rabbanan found themselves in a conundrum. Yeah, but the word I wanted to use is a dialectic situation. What I mean by dialectic is there's thesis and antithesis, right? That's what's called Hegel. If you ever so. What's the thesis and the antithesis here? The thesis here is the mitzvah of Chanukah. Why? Because the last-ditch effort to salvage the mitzvah of Chanukah is to have you light on your table. Okay? On the other side of the spectrum, we have loss of Jewish life because there's always the possibility, even if it's not probable, it's not likely that they may discover that you lit this candle. And here... They might actually, if we take the word sakana literally, they might actually put you to death. So it's you're increasing loss of Jewish life. So what do we do in this case? So I'm suggesting a possibility, again just thinking out loud, that maybe the Rabbanan said the following. If it's regilus, if what happened in the case of Rabbah was not the exception to the rule that the chaverim entered into the house, but rather it was the rule itself, then we know that by changing the nature of the mitzvah of Chanukah, bringing it inside and putting it on your table, that's not going to salvage this danger situation. So in that case, we would definitely have to do away with the mitzvah of their Chanukah. Not only would we tell you don't light Chanukah on the outside of your house, we're going to tell you don't light Chanukah on the inside of your house. But Tosas Machadish, that what happened at the time of Rabbah was the exception to the rule. It was a rare occasion in which the Chaverim sent in their police patrol inside the house, which they normally don't do. Maybe they did it because there was such a group of Jewish people, you know, that were descending on Rabbah's bedroom, you know, to be by his bedside when he was ill. So they suspected that they're not sitting in the dark there. They probably lit a candle. Let's go and get the Jews. So in that case, if it's Ein Regilus Kol Kach, then the Rabbanu would make a shikul and decide it's better to at least salvage the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah in this new framework of Al Shulchan Ovidayo, even if it means that in some rare occasion, again, I don't know what the percentages are, to salvage the mitzvah of Chanukah and endanger the lives of the Jewish people. Michael?
The story of Rabbah, presumably the Gemara doesn't go on to say that they killed Rabbah. So if they didn't kill him, then I don't understand where's the sakana.
Right. So then you have to assume that the word sakana should not be taken literally, but rather we're talking about some sort of punitive measures, maybe severe fines, you know, heavy fines, or maybe it means that they would incarcerate you or something. But again, I don't know all the details of the Gemara Gittin. If you have a minute, Michael, again, it all depends upon how much effort you want to put into this. That's up to you. To take out a Gemara Gittin, which you'll find on the other side of this wall, and see if you might find, I didn't get a chance to look at the Gemara Gittin, some element in the story that would change our whole understanding.
when Rava was sick, if they lit a candle, it couldn't have been for Hanukkah. It would have had been meant to be used to see and visit with him or to help heal him. So if it wasn't Hanukkah, what's the danger? I mean, is a person, was any candle forbidden?
Right. All candles were forbidden.
Any non-Jew.
So that's Usher's raising another problem here. If it was even the non-Jews that were forbidden because of the respect that you had for the God, then l'chor, that's not called Shas Hashmad. Do you follow Shas Hashmad, which is the classical case of Shas Hashmad, is the Yevonim, you know, that we're dealing with in Hanukkah.
This is Sakana. This is like nobody...
Right. So this is not Shas
Hashmad. Nobody can play music after 10 o'clock. You know,
right, right. So this is not Shas Hashmad. This is Shas Sakana. And the question again is whether we take Sakana literally. If we take Sakana literally, then I think what we might suggest is that rather than give up on the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, the Chachamim prefer to have a new formulation of the mitzvah of Chanukah, allowing you to implement and achieve that mitzvah by lighting on your table.
Then he says here, the only reason they entered his house on that particular day was because it was the day of a Persian holiday.
Right. Oh, Persian. Okay, that's interesting. That's a chiddush I didn't know. We're talking about the Chaverim are Persians, which makes it so relevant to our sugya because we're talking about Paras Umadai.
And it says, on which kindling lights was only permitted in their temples. So they were just enforcing the law, saying that basically you're not allowed to light.
So then that's not Shas Hashmad. No. Then my premise or my suggestion that what we're talking about here and why, you know, why Hanukkah goes down the tubes, it can't be Shas Hashmad. It has to be Sakana as opposed to Shmad, because this Gzeira was not limited or restricted to the Jewish people. Even the Goyim themselves, a Persian, you know, a rank and file Persian citizen, was not allowed to light any candles in his house out of respect b'yom edjam for their God. If that be the case, then we're not talking about again, there were plenty of Gzeiros at the time of Paras Uvadai that were focused specifically on the Jewish people in order to undermine their religion, but this is not one of them. This may be a slightly different historical period during the Paras Golus, and it has to do with all. So we're talking about Sakana and Nachman.
The Persian generally actually were very good to the Jews. They weren't
could be. I don't know the history of it, but at this particular Gzeira, we're not talking about Shas Hashmad. Good. So that's one thing I wanted to discuss with you. Now, here's another question that I wanted to raise with you. One second. I know I had this yesterday. Let's see if I can get it back into my brain. One second. Okay, I don't remember what I was going to point out. Second, what was I going to say? I wrote myself a note here. Now I'm trying to decipher what I wrote. Right, I don't want to waste too much time. I had another point to make over here. But I don't remember what it was, so I apologize about that. Okay. Now, the Gemara in the next line that we saw last time says the following. Amar Rava, Tzorech Nera Cheres L'Hishtamesh Li'ora. So this is what we call the Shamash, right? We in Ashkenazim call them the Shamash, right? And that means an extra candle. Now Rashi tries to explain why we need this extra candle. So let's take a look at Rashi. Nera Cheres. Says Rashi, Lasos Heker L'Dovar. Okay, so what does this mean? Lasos Heker L'Dovar. It's critical that it becomes, Heker means crystal clear to the observer that your Ner is a Ner Mitzvah. And if you're lighting a candle on your table, then what does the onlooker assume? Why are you lighting a candle on your dining room table?
Light.
For your own purposes, correct? Not for the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, unless you have a Ner Acheres, an extra Ner. Okay. Now again, it's very important to note that this statement is attributed to Rava. Rava is the Baal HaMemra. Why do I point this out? Because if you go back for a second to Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph, so you will see that Rava is the one who says on the bottom line, Mutu Lishtamesh Li'ora, that you're allowed to benefit from the light of Ner Chanukah. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You know, we assume like Rav here on Daf Kafal from Beis that also Lishtamish Lior, but Rav himself is of the opinion that Mutu Lishtamish Lior. Now, from why did Rashi have to introduce this concept of Heker? That's the question I want to ask you. If mutal ishtamish li'ora, according to Rava, then the onlooker would suspect that you are lighting this candle for your own purposes. And yet, Rashi says you need an extra candle. So what conclusion should I derive here from this Rashi? Even according to Rava, who holds what? Mutal ishtamish li'or, I still need a ner acheres. Which means the following, that it's not that Rava, by maintaining that mutal ishtamish li'or, he drops the requirement of hekera. No, he requires hekera. But now we're in a bond. Because how do we establish hekera according to Rava, who says mutal ishtamish li'or? Meaning, it seems that, by definition, built into the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, there's no requirement of Hekera. And that's where Rashi says, a chiddush here, that in the name of, you know, in interpreting the statement of Rav himself, that Tzarech Ner Acheres. Now, I'm almost, Rav Bosei, don't take me literally here, but I'm tempted to think that you should cross out two words from the Gemara. I mean, nobody says this. I mean, it just burrs on. So this is absolute craziness. But take out the words lishtamish li'ora, because according to Rava, it's always muta lishtamish li'ora. Rava's statement is that tzarech ner acheres, meaning that I want to take two statements or two principles and combine them, even though they seem mutually exclusive. Namely, on the one hand, I'm going to take the statement that mutal ishtamish li'ora, on the other hand, I'm going to say tzarech hekera. Now, how do you reconcile those
two?
They're
not mutually exclusive. You need both.
How? That's Rava's question. Rava's coming to answer the following question, according to Rashi. How do you maintain the following two principles and fulfill them both? Number one, mutal ishtamish li'ora, and number two, you need a ner sheyesh bo hekera. How do you achieve that? That's what Rav is coming to address over here. There's a paradox in the halach itself that Rav has to find a what I call a kasav ashlishi sheyachriya b'neim, because the shnei ksuba machishim says that. You can't tell me that tzarech hekera and at the same time say mutal ishtamish li'ora, because if it's mutal ishtamish li'ora, then by definition there's no hekera. Comes along Rava with a kasav ashlishi, a psachivish, that it's not enough to light one ner Chanukah. Why? Because if you light one ner Chanukah and we hold that muta lishtamish liora, we're left with what problem? The absence of hekera. Says Rava, you have to light two neros. You got to light one ner, which we call a shamash, right, for your purposes, and then another ner, which is ner Chanukah. So now, when the Roeh sees that you're benefiting from the candle, he's going to attribute your hana, your tzorach, your benefit to what? to the Shalom. She's not going to assume that you're even though Lamaisi you're allowed to benefit from the Ner Chanukah, because we're holding according to Rava. But nevertheless, we now have conveyed the message, so to speak, to the onlooker that the extra Ner, meaning, let's say he lights the Shamash first, right, that's what I assume, and then he goes ahead and he lights a second Ner. Again, we're not up to Madora, because sometimes you want to add, intensify your illumination. But let's assume one Nair would have been sufficient. So you could cut your mustard seeds with one Nair, right? So then why did you add a second Nair? The answer is the second Nair was a Nair Shel Mitzvah.
No, according to Rabbi, you can light the Shamash second. You don't have to light it first. Why do you have to light first?
Because you need Hekera, and there's no Hekera in the Nair.
Hekera by the second candle.
But the first candle was the Ner Mitzvah.
Okay.
So we paskin ad lokos and mitzvah, so you need a Ner that has a Keira in order to fulfill your mitzvah. You can't make it into a Ner after you lit the candle, right? Because then the hadloka is not a mitzvah. So first you light the Shamash, and now when you get to the second Ner, that second Ner clearly becomes a Ner Shel Mitzvah. So your hadloka, the second Ner, is a Kiyuma Mitzvah. That's the way you could learn Rashi. Okay. Okay. So now I want to share with you something else. Okay. I just have to find this for you and for me. Okay. Comes along the Bir Agra, and he says that according to Rashi, get this, la halacha, we don't need a shamash. Can you guess why the Gaon thinks so? No, la halacha, again, Rava holds mutal shtamish liora. Zokta Rashi, we have a problem, because if mutal shtamish liora, what are we lacking by definition? Hekera. So how does Rava solve the problem of Hekera if he holds Mutal Shtamash Yorah with a Shamash? La halacha we paskin, like who? Like Rav. What does Rav hold? Also Shtamash Yorah. Says the Gaon, we don't need a Shamash. Why not? Because if Rashi is saying the only reason for the Shamash is for what? Hekera. There's no problem with Hekera. Because also Shtamash Yorah. And if you're not going to use the or, then why did you light the candle? Obviously, it's for the sake of what? Mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Now again, we're not paskening to do away with the Shamash, right? And the reason for that is because of the Baal HaMa'or. The Baal HaMa'or says that... I'll read it to you. Aflamisha sover mutul shtamish or ner Chanukah modesh et zorach l'ner acheres. From the fact that the Baal HaMa'or adds the word af, he's telling you the following: that even though Rava holds mutul shtamish liora, which would seem that there's no din of hekera whatsoever, nay, there's a din of hekera even according to Rav, but according to those who say asul shtamish liora, then it's clear that we need a shamash. Why do we need a shamash according to those who say osul shtamish lior? It must be that the Baal HaMa'or is operating with a whole different premise. Not with the premise of Rashi, that the extra ner is for the purpose of hekera, because if you hold osul shtamish lior, there's no need for hekera. But simply, it's a matir for the shtamshus. So there are two ways of understanding Rava's statement of Tzorach Lahadlik Ner Acheres. Either Rava is giving me a basic halacha in the midst of Ner Chanukah, meaning your halacha has to be with Heker, that's why Rashi learns it. And Rava holds that since Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, I need Hekera, therefore I must have the Shamash. Says the Vilna Gaon, according to Rashi, if we paskin that Osl Ishtamish Li'ora, there's no point and no requirement of an Ner Acheres because we don't have any lack of Hekera. Or we could say no, that the Tzorach Ner Acheres has nothing to do, as Rashi would have, with Hekera, but it's in order to be Matir the Ishtamshus. So that if I need to benefit from the Ner Chanukah, again, in those days they didn't have electricity, so I'm allowed to do so, because then I can attribute my tzorech and my anah to the Ner Acheres. It relates to the Ner Acheres. And that's going to allow me to be mishtamish. He quotes here the Rashba. The Rashba says, Af Rava Sover Sha'osu L'shtamish Li'ora. Now, it's the statement of Rava that we saw in Daf Chafal from Nalf is only according to Rav Huna. Because Rav Huna says that there's a problem on Shabbos with those inferior Shmonim because of Shema Yata. And that's because Mutal L'shtamish Li'ora. That's what Rava interprets in Rav Chizda, in Rav Huna. But Rava himself holds that Osu L'shtamish Li'ora. And since Osu L'shtamish Li'ora, says the Rashba, Rava needs some sort of a matir, because in event that I need to use the light for whatever I need it for, I can't use it. I'm enjoined from using it because also Tamish Lior, and therefore I have to light another Nair to be matir. But he says, Lemandi Omar Mutul Tamish Liora, Hare Eino Choshesh, Shema Yomru Ha'ovrim Vashovim Shehidlako Solitzarko. This is unbelievable. We said that according to Rashi, the reason why we need a shamash is because mutal ishtamish liora, and that's Rava's opinion. Rava wasn't just telling you and analyzing what Rav Huna would hold, but he himself adopted that position of mutal ishtamish liora. Says the Gaon, but according to Rashi, since we paskin osel ishtamish liora, there's no need for a shamash. Comes along the Rashba and he says just the opposite. That if you hold Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, then you don't need a Shamash. Why does Rava require a Shamash? Because Rava maintains that Osel Ishtamish Li'ora, which means the following, that if you hold Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, there was never a requirement of Hekera, because the fact that he's benefiting from the Nair would not in any way undermine, in the mind of the onlooker, the fact that he lit it for the sake of Chanukah, because since Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, he was perfectly justified in using the Nair. Ella, if we hold Osel Ishtamish Li'ora, we need an extra candle in event that he needs to use the Nair. So whereas Rashi is on one polar extreme, and he requires the Shamash because Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, the Rashba is of the opinion that if Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, we don't need an extra Shamash, because the onlooker would never be mistaken about the Nair. He can identify the Nair as a Nair Chanukah, because Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, the fact that he's benefiting from the Nair doesn't in any way undermine or disprove the thesis that it's a Nair Chanukah. But if we hold Osel Ishtamish Li'ora, then how are you going to enjoy the benefit if, in event that you need it, of the Nair Chanukah? It's because you added a Shamash. So whereas the Rashba is of the opinion that Dafka Kointed Madi Omer Osel Ishtamish Li'ora, we need a Shamash. But if I hold Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, then I don't need a Shamash, because there's no problem here. There's no issue of Hekera. There always is Hekera in the case of Mutal. If you hold the position Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, Rashi says no. Dafka, if I hold Mutal Ishtamish Li'ora, that creates a need for Hekera, and therefore I need an extra Shamash, an extra candle. But if I hold Osel Ishtamish Li'ora, then there's no problem with Hekera.
Is this both outside and inside that they're talking?
Yeah. What do you mean, Steve? I mean, what's the deeper meaning of your question?
I'm inside, I've got candles lit all around my house because it's dark otherwise. How am I going to know which candle I lit for Hanukkah versus which I lived for.
Right. I'm going to reformulate, Steve, your question. You'll tell me if I'm doing justice to your question. If he's lighting on the outside, then why would a person light a candle on the outside? Presumably, he's lighting it for the sake of the mitzvah. So this whole discussion about hakeira or not hakeira, or is he allowed to use the ner or not allowed to use it, would only apply. In other words, after Rava established, you know, two statements of Rava that are contiguous. The first statement of Rava is that after Shas Sakana, where do we light the candle? On the inside. Then Rava adds, you need a ner acheres, meaning the second statement of Rava is standing on the shoulders of the first statement of Rava. Now that we've allowed you to light the candle on the inside, we have a real problem here, because either A, and this is Rashi's approach, we have an absence of hekera, or B, according to the Rashba's approach, we have a problem of also l'shtamish li'ora. And in the event that you need to benefit, we need to obviate, circumvent the violation of this Iser of Asa L'shtam Shior, and therefore we have to add a Ner Acheres. But if your Ner is outside, so Steve says, I'm just assuming that you would agree with me, and I'm agreeing with you, there the whole issue doesn't exist. It's only in the light of Rava's breakthrough about Shasa Sakana that we now have shifted the Ner from outside to inside. Now the problem is it's on your table, and A, there's no Akeira, because maybe you're lighting it in order to light up your dining room table, and B, we now have a problem of Osulish Tamish Liora. So Rabosai, the Baal HaMor is the middle shita here. The Baal HaMor is assuming that mimarefshach, you require a ner acheres. And the chiddush of Rava is that even though Rava maintains, like he said in Rav Huna earlier on Amud Aleph, that mutal ishtamish li'ora, still Rava would agree that you need a ner acheres. Why? Because there is no akeira of mutal ishtamish li'ora. But that's the chiddush of the Gemara, that even though mutal shtamish li'ora, you need a ner acheres. If you hold also shtamish li'ora, then for sure you need a ner acheres. So we have three shitos over here. In other words, what we're asking is, if somebody could chart this out for me, we're asking, does this requirement of Rava for a shamash apply A, only if I hold mutal shtamish li'ora, B, only if I hold Asul Ishtamish Yoro, or C, whether or not I hold Mutul Ishtamish Yoro or Asul Ishtamish Yoro. So let's go through the three shitos. The way the Gaon is learning Rashi, the requirement of a Shamash is only according to the Man Yom who says Mutul Ishtamish Yoro, because then we have a problem of Ekeira. If you hold Asul Ishtamish Yoro, there's no problem of Ekeira, and therefore he doesn't need a Shamash. On the other polar extreme, we have the sheet of the Rashba, that the requirement of a shamash is dafka according to the Man D'Omer, who holds also l'shtamish li'or, because we need the extra candle or to be matir, a situation where he benefits from the candle. But if I hold mutal l'shtamish li'ora, then apparently there's no requirement of hekera, because the onlooker sees that you're benefiting from the ner by eating your sufganiot to the ner chanukah on the table. He says, well, that's a ner Hanukkah, because in general mutal l'shtamish li'ora. Then we have in the middle, we have the Baal HaMor, who says that there are two reasons why you need a shamash. One reason will apply if you hold mutal l'shtamish li'ora, and therefore you need a hekera. The other is if you hold asul l'shtamish li'ora, and therefore you need a matir to allow you to benefit from the ner. So that's a summary of what we discussed. Okay. So three shitas about the shamash. The most fascinating sheet in my mind is the Gaon's understanding of Rashi, that the whole issue of hekera only arises if you hold mutal l'shtamish li'ora, but we hold asul l'shtamish li'ora, and there's no issue of hekera, therefore you don't need the shamash. Now, I would ask the following question, which just occurred to my mind. Let's say, according to Rashi, if you hold asul l'shtamish li'ora, I'm sorry, start again. According to Rashi, if Rava is maintaining that mutal l'shtamish li'ora, and therefore lacking in hekera, that's Rashi Shita, what would be, according to that man d'omer Rava, according to Rashi, if he lit the candle without a shamash? would he have to start from scratch and make a new bracha, start with the shamash, and then light his ner Chanukah? Now, to what extent is this requirement of hekera, according to Rashi, li'ikuva, absolutely indispensable? If I go with the Baal HaMor is telling me that, like Rashi, we need hekera. According to the Baal HaMor, also l'shtamish the Or for sure. Oh, here's what I want to say. This just occurred to me. If you hold Asul Shtamish Li'ora, and the reason why we need a Ner Acheres is only to be Matir Shtamshus, if he went ahead and he lit the candle and he didn't add the Shamash, lo mi boy, according to the Vilna Gaon, who says that Lalocha, we don't require Shamash because we hold Asul Shtamish Li'ora. But even if I go with the Baal HaMor, who says that even if we hold us l'shtam show, we need a shamash. Why? Because otherwise, if you have hana, you're violating the isur. What would the Baal HaMor say? 1 second. What would the Baal HaMor say in the case where he did not light a shamash, and you're holding now us l'shtamish li'ora? If you hold mutal l'shtamish li'ora, so then I would insist, again, you could argue with me, but my intuitive response would be that he has to start from scratch, because since he didn't light the Shamash and he needs Hekera, then his lighting of the Ner Chanukah is not a Ner Chanukah at all, and he would have to start again from the beginning. But if I hold also l'shtamish li'ora and there is Hekera, and I only need the Shamash in order to be Matir Hana and Toeles, then if, let's say, he didn't light the Shamash, then Nothing terrible has happened over here. He might violate the Isur of Asul Ishtamish Li'ora in an event that he benefits from the candle, but that doesn't undermine the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Why? Because since Asul Ishtamish Li'ora, there's no need for Hekera. The Ner Chanukah has its own built-in Hekera, just that you're not allowed to benefit from the Ner Chanukah. So we'll give him patch if he benefits from the Ner Chanukah and punish him for that. But it doesn't undermine the Ner Chanukah. So therefore, I would insist that even if I hold like the Baal HaMor, that Asul Ishtamish Li'ora and Fendesveg, nevertheless, we need an extra Ner. But if he omitted the extra Ner, he would still maintain, he would still be Yotzi the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. And according to the Rashba says that Rav and our Sugya holds Asul Ishtamish Li'ora, but we need a matir. That's only lechatchila. If he left out that matir, and faker, according to the Rashba, if mutal ishtamish li'ora, then there's no need for an extra candle. So again, halacha lemaisa. If you ask me, what's going to be if he left out the shamash? So first of all, we could go with the Vilna Gaon's understanding of Rashi that if you hold asul ishtamish li'ora, you don't even need that kerem. Number two, we could say that if you go with the Baal HaMor and you say that Asul Ishtamish Li'ora, we still need Hekera, but that's not Midin Hekera, that's Midin Heter Ishtamshus, then I would say that he was still Yotze the Mitzvah. You know, he might be, shall we say, we might recommend him to light another Ner as a Shamash, but that's only L'chatchila, so that he can avoid violating the Isur Ishtamshus. And if you hold like the Rashba, and the Rashba says that Rav here now suyolz osul ishtamish li'ora, so you're only trying to be matir ishtamshus, then once again, if you left out the shavash, you would still be yotze the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. So again, I'm tempted to think that based on our analysis of the sugya, you would not require redoing the mitzvah because we pass in also l'shtamish li'ora. Again, the exception to that rule would be the Rashba. The Rashba says that even though also l'shtamish li'ora, nevertheless you need the shamash. But again, it could be that the Rashba is holding you need the shamash only to be matir hanno. Correct. Okay. So that's this. I don't know, I can't seem to figure this out. If anyone has a way of figuring this out, then let me know. You need some sort of a stand here, which I don't own. If somebody wants to buy me a stand, Yehuda. Okay. All right. So now, Rabosai, we're up to the Brisa. And the Brisa says that my Hanukkah. Now, before Rashi, we could ask our own my Hanukkah. And that would be, why is Hanukkah called Hanukkah? Okay, so you and I know that there's one famous answer to that question, why we call these days Hanukkah, my Hanukkah. And that is the answer that's offered by some Rishonim. I'll try as we go along to tell you, to identify who they are. That you take apart the word Hanukkah into two, you split in the middle, and the first three letters are Chanu, and the second two, and the last two letters are Chaf He. And the word Chanu means they rested from the battle. And on that day of the 25th of Kislev, as the Braisa would say, they completed their Milcham. However, I want to just mention to you here in the Yalkut Biurim, he has a number of other approaches to the name Chanukah. First of all, he has the Machzor Vitri. So the Vitri was a Talmud of Rashi. So we're going back a long time into history. And he says that the word Chanukah comes from the word Chen, which means that we found grace or Chen in the eyes of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, God brought about this great miracle of Chanukah. Now, if that be the case, you might wonder, why is the name Chanukah? Why not call it Chen? You know, Chen means we found grace in the eyes of God. I think you're going to have to again add that the Chaf Hei here has to do with the 25th of Kislev, and that's the day in which we found grace in the eyes of God. And the Tikkuni Zohar adds a little bit of an embellishment. Shebiyom Zeh, on that day when we completed the Milchama, Sharsa Shechina Al Yisrael. And he says that if you take Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Michael, I'm going to need your help for this. If you can open up either a Chumash, if you like, the Parsha Sekev, or if you open up a Siddur. He says that there are 25 letters in Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. I didn't get a chance to check that out. But that would reflect this idea that the Shekhinah rested, we found Chen in the eyes of God on the 25th of Kislev. Okay. Then we have the answer of the Arzarua. He was one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz. This is also pretty famous, that the word Chanukah means Chinuch HaMizbeach, or Chanukas HaMizbeach. And the Arzarua insists that the Givonim actually broke apart the Mizbeach. And it was rebuilt by the Chashmonaim on the 25th of Kislev. That's the day in which they rebuilt the Mizbeach, and after that they did what's called the Chanukas HaMizbeach. That's going to be very relevant to the Kriyas HaTorah of the 8 days of Chanukah, which we read about, the Chanukas HaNasim. Then he quotes a Shiboli HaLeket, which is also one of the Rishonim, a little bit later in history, and he says that the Yevonim contaminated the Hechal, the Azoros, all the clay Migdash and all the Shmonim, and then when the Chashmonim won the battle, they went ahead and they instituted a process of what's called Hechsher. Hechsher means to absolutely rededicate the entire Migdash, not just the Mizbeach as we saw in the Arzarua, but as Kol HaMigdash LaAvodah. And now he says that the word Chanukah means what's called Chanchu Oso. Chanchu Oso means that when you build a Beis HaMikdash, the very first time that you use the Mikdash for Avodah is Mechanech, the clay Shareis and the Beis HaMikdash. Then he quotes another group of Rishonim, which is the Orchas Chaim Mekolbo and others, and the Torah brings down the Shita, that we're familiar with, that Chanukah means Chanu B'Chaf Hei. And the word Chanu means Chanoya. Chanoya means when they rested from the wars and the battles. Okay, the Bach has another adds another dimension here. He says that when the candles were lit, there's an Isur Molocha. And he wants to say that the word Chanoya means to rest from Molocha. So again, even though we don't abstain from Molocha, as we see in Rashi here, makes a big deal about that on Chanukah, but nevertheless, in the original Chanukah on the 25th, they desisted from Molocha because the Neros were Dolkim. They lit the menorah on that day. And finally, he quotes the Avud Jaham. The Avud Jaham lived about 6 centuries ago. And he says that Chanukah is an otrikun. Again, I can't take this literally, but in any event, it's a very interesting Avud Jaham. And he says that if you take the word Chanukah, and each letter in the word Chanukah, if you write it horizontally, but now you create a new word vertically from each letter, is the Ches stands for Shmona Neros, for the 8 candles. And he says, I'm sorry, the Ches stands for 8, for Shmona, right, the number 8. The Nun stands for Neros. And the after Chanukah we have Vav, Chav, Hey, and that stands for Ve, Halacha, Ke, right, the Chav is Ke, and Kibes Hillel, Shemosif Aholech. Just 1 second. So what do we do with the Hey? Just 1 second. Oh, Ke Hillel. So the Chav is Kibes, and the Hey is Hillel. Now, we had a whole discussion about whether or not we really paskin like Beis Hillel. Remember, the Zkenim, some Zkenim did like Beit Shammai. Okay, now the Braisa. The Braisa says that the Chofei Kislev, Yomei de Chanukah, Tamnin Inhu. There are 8 days of Chanukah. Now, we have a principle called Sveika de Yoma. Right? And that's why the Gemara Beitza establishes what's called Yom Tov Sheni Shalgolios. So he asks the question here, this is the Pre-Chadosh who lived about 3 centuries ago and more, why don't we celebrate 9 days of Chanukah in Chutz Laretz? Yeah. And I thought the obvious answer would be because by the time you got to Chaf Hei, the Shluchim got out and we knew exactly when Chaf Hei was. But the Pre-Chadosh has his own original answer to this question. And he says the following, that there's a fundamental difference between a mitzvah d'oraisa and a mitzvah d'rabbanan. In a mitzvah d'oraisa, they would impose upon the people in Chutz Laretz an extra day of Yontif. And that would apply to all 3 regalim. But in the case of Chanukah, which is only a mitzvah d'rabbanan, lo ratzu l'hatriach v'lasos od yom. They didn't want to add a tirch of having to add another day of Chanukah. Again, I don't know if it's such a great tirch, but that's his first answer. But then he gives the second answer. And he says the following. He says that the number 8 is absolutely engraved in stone as far as the holiday of Chanukah is concerned. If you were to tamper with the number 8 and add another day, you would undermine the very essence of Chanukah. Why? He says because the primary victim or the dimension of religion that the Yevanim objected to was the mitzvah of Milah. And the mitzvah of Milah is symbolized by the number 8, because it's on the 8th day. And in order to remember the miracle of Chanukah, the purpose of which is to protect and perpetuate, if you will, the mitzvah of Milah, we had to have the number 8. I would assume that we have to combine the 2 answers of the Pre-Chadosh. In other words, it's also because the mitzvah d'Rabbanan, so the Rabbanan can decide whether or not they're going to add an extra day or not, and the number 8, which reflects the mitzvah of Milah, that the Nes was done. And, you know, Rabbosai, today, I don't have to tell you this, there are many, unfortunately, too many places on the face of the earth that are attacking the Milah. I forget exactly. I think in the state of California, they prohibit what's called mitzitza bepeh. But I think in Spain or maybe in South America, which country? The Swedish. Oh yeah, maybe in the Scandinavian countries they want to outlaw Milah. And the whole mitzvah of Chanukah, according to the Pri Chodesh, is to commemorate the perpetual mitzvah of Milah. So that's really interesting, and that's the number eight.
So, in terms of, they would have the same problem with Purim, right? If you were going to say we would have to add that extra day, we'd have the same issue. If you didn't say you're not doing it because it's not the Raisa, you'd have the same problem with Purim.
Meaning, if you accept the first answer, the Pri Chodesh, then that would help us for Purim as well. If you accept the second answer. Just one second. One second, sorry. So I don't know. When we get to Birch Shem to Masechta Megillah, please make a note to ask me why there's no Sveika D'Yoma on Purim. And Purim is on the 14th. You know, I don't know. Maybe there would be Sveika D'Yoma on the 14th. Okay, Rabosai, so we'll stop here. And I know we didn't move that far in the Gemara, but we clarified, first of all, a three-way machlokas as to what it means that you have to add another ner a shamash. We came to the conclusion, and this we have to look up in Shulchan Aruch Bli Neder, that halacha l'maaseh, if you lit a ner Chanukah without a shamash, you would not have to repeat the mitzvah. And we studied the sugya of sakana. We raised the possibility that maybe sakana here means shmad. And then we rejected that because we thought that this decree of the Persians was not directed at the Jewish religion. It wasn't Shmad. We discussed the question of how much of a percentage of Sakana there would be if he lights on his Shulchan, because maybe the Chaverim would penetrate into his house, into the Holy of Holies. And they would discover his Ner Chanukah, and yet we were required to light the Ner Chanukah on the table. Tosfos says, because ain't regulus kol kach. And finally, we had a discussion about the name Chanukah. So, Bli Neder, tomorrow we'll try to research some of the things that we mentioned today and maybe take it a little bit further, and then to try to learn this Braisa, what exactly happened, and why does the Braisa. How does the Braisa justify the celebration and the commemoration of Chanukah? So that's what we want to do, but we need to
literally move to see, I care.
You there, how did it work? Do you have anything to add or subtract from the various discussions that we had today? All right, think about it. All right, then?
To acknowledge Hakira, to the translation of Hakira. Acknowledge to...